Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Always check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can find archived programs there at veritasmedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you doing?
Doing great.
I hope you had a great weekend as well.
Sure did.
I got a special guest on today's show, and of course, that's always good to have special guests on this program. And of course, along the way, if anybody has any questions, they can certainly call or text into the show. Get a lot of texts on this show as well. 806-745-5800, area code 806-745-5800. So introduce our guest today, sir.
Well, we've got a very interesting guest today. Actually, it's one of our patients introduced me. I think a lot of our patients, at least, are familiar with wellnessmama.com. It's a website run by a lady who is kind of into all things natural, kind of like we are. But anyway, she does a podcast and interviewed Will Clyden from Ojai Energetics. And the topic is cannabinoids, CBD. And I think a lot of people I know in this area, a lot of people are starting to be more aware of CBD oil. I think even a store popped up over on 4th Street recently.
They're popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
And we just had some seminars on it last week.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and some of my ag buddies are really looking into the production of it because there's a lot of potential there. But anyways, I'm interested because I'm always looking for nutrients that the body needs to function normally. Obviously, at our clinic, we rely on the design of the body to work like it's supposed to. And if you put the right inputs in and avoid the things that disrupt normal function, then you would expect the body to work right. And so it's all about putting the right things in. And when there's a nutrient deficiency, you'll expect some consequences from that. And as I look into CBD, and really when I even look at supplements, I categorize supplements as symptom treatment versus a supplemental nutrient that's just deficient in our diet. So that's two different categories, supplemental nutrients that we should be getting in our food, in our diet that we're not. We've got a supplement versus symptomatic treatment, which there's a gazillion supplements on the market to treat various symptoms from high blood pressure, high blood sugar, to anxiety, to you name it. But when you can get an actual nutrient in that we're lacking, then you would expect a lot of these symptoms to go away too. So the more I've learned about CBD, the more I consider it an actual nutrient that we're deficient in. So
okay. Well, let's take a phone call before we get to the guest. But
yeah.
Good morning. Welcome into the show. Hello. Caller, are you there? Okay, well, I guess we lost them. Okay, but we can go to the guests now, to the other dual line we have here.
Yeah.
And your guest is?
Will Clyden.
Okay.
And Will, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. I know you're out in California, so it's bright and early out there, but appreciate you coming on to the show and educating us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you all for having me.
All right. Well, I think we need to start just right off the bat with just an explanation for folks that are not familiar. They hear cannabinoids, cannabis, hemp, and marijuana, and some people kind of freak out and think, uh-oh, we're talking about an illegal drug here. So just explain, if you would, for folks that maybe are totally in the dark on CBD, cannabinoids, what that means, what is that, and the relationship there with hemp, if you don't mind. Then we'll get into some of the specifics of what it does.
Yeah, perfect. So CBD is one of 110 compounds that the hemp plant and cannabis plant produces. They're called cannabinoids. Probably the most famous is THC, which is one variety of cannabis that is known for its psychoactivity. A cousin of it is hemp, which is really a legal definition, but it's kind of like a different type of tomato plant. You've got a beefsteak and a cherry tomato. It's all cannabis plants, but one type are psychoactive. Other ones don't get you intoxicated at all. In fact, CBD counteracts psychoactivity of THC. And so that's the varietal that the hemp varietal contains the high amounts of CBD and other cannabinoids and phytonutrients and terpenes and bioflavonoids. So when people talk about CBD oil, ideally what the body is looking for is not just CBD by itself. It's CBD with other cannabinoids below a psychoactive threshold of THC, and then the bioflavonoids and terpenes and other nutrients. And that's what the hemp plant produces.
Okay. So it's a wide variety of plant of phytochemicals, just broadly speaking, phytoplant chemicals or chemicals, but so naturally occurring chemicals, but a broad spectrum, a wide variety working synergistically together. And one subset of that is the cannabinoids. So explain to folks, you know, I like to use a key into a keyhole analogy when it comes to hormones or certain nutrients in the body. There's receptors. Receptors are the keyholes. And these various nutrients and hormones are the keys. And so if we have receptors in the body, obviously we're meant to have the keys to go into those receptors. So explain a little bit about the endocannabinoid system in the body and what that is.
Yeah, so it was discovered in 1991 by an Israeli researcher. And he realized there had to be these keyholes because cannabinoids had an effect on the body. No one had discovered the endocannabinoid system yet, and he did. In 91, and what this system is I liken it to like the conductor of the body's symphony. So it's got receptors in every system of the body, every organ has endocannabinoid receptors, and then at a cellular level, every cell has endocannabinoid receptors, CB1 and CB2, and then at an organ system level, you find CB1 predominantly in the brain and nervous system, and CB2 in all the other systems from skeletal to digestive, reproductive, nerve, respiratory, cardiovascular, etc. And so its job is to regulate what's homeostatic balance. And homeostasis means that everything is operating and firing at the right time. So it's kind of like the car's computer, making sure that everything is firing. The endocannabinoid system is like the car's computer or the conductor of the symphony, making sure that everything's firing at the right levels at the right time. And one of the ways that it does this is by buffering oxidative stress. And so oxidation is what ages our cells. It's kind of like rust for the cells. And so the endocannabinoid system's job is to buffer that as well as maintain and ensure that everything's functioning together. And so these phytocannabinoids actually feed the endocannabinoid system and we produce cannabinoids internally, but just like we produce B vitamins in our gut flora, B12, we also need to eat B12 to have a healthy level. It's no different with cannabinoids. We've actually evolved consuming phytocannabinoids, meaning plant-based, from the cannabis plant for thousands and thousands of years. It was actually one of the first documented agricultural plants from when humans went from hunter-gatherer to agricultural society. Which point started in Asia, the Scythians took it and brought it everywhere they went. They brought it to the Romans. Romans brought it everywhere they went. They brought it to the British. The British brought it everywhere they went, including to the United States. Jamestown was actually the first cannabis law in the country. It was a law written to require that the cannabis hemp plant was grown. In fact, the first draft of the Constitution was written on it, as well as the first flag. And so people, when they grow this plant, they were growing it for industrial uses as well as food and medical. And the first recorded cookbook in the world's history is a Roman cookbook. And there's actually a recipe cooking with cannabis is one of the recipes. And so there was direct consumption, but there was also indirect when you're growing this plant for rope, fiber, sales. The term canvas comes from cannabis. You would feed it to the chickens and the livestock, which is documented. And it turns out that when the animals eat this, the cannabinoids end up in their meat as well as their eggs and their milk. And so Colorado did studies, and they found that chickens who are fed hemp flowers actually have up to 1% CBD content, as well as the other minor cannabinoids, because it's full spectrum. It's not an isolate. And an isolate's very limited in its effect on the body. We need all of them together, which is an incredible amount. And so all of our ancestors for millennia have been consuming these micronutrients, and we artificially cut them out of the diet in the 40s with prohibition. And we coupled that with an exponential uptick of oxidation with just modern living. And so we kind of one-two-punched ourselves from a nutrient deficiency standpoint. And the results, when you get the endocannabinoid system back up online, and the key is getting enough in to actually turn the system on, it's nothing short of really, I mean, it makes sense, but it's still miraculous on such a diversity of benefits to the body and the outcomes that we're seeing.
Wow. So the 1940s, we always talk about on this show because I'm really a big proponent of Weston A. Price and all his work. In the 1930s, he documented so many different people groups around the world, and the ones that were eating their native traditional diets full of fat-soluble, water-soluble vitamins and the minerals were resilient and resistant to disease, to cavities, to tuberculosis. But that's when we started to really see a change in the modern diet with the enrichment of flour and the processing of flour and, of course, all the sugar and then kind of mass farming techniques coming in. But I never thought about the prohibition part and the cannabinoids being so widely consumed prior to that and now all of a sudden suddenly gone. Right at the same timeline of all our food supply started to change so much. So,
right.
And the oxidative stress component we talk about a lot on this show and how to optimize our antioxidant enzyme system through remineralization. But so what you're saying is the cannabinoid, the endocannabinoid system, one of the primary roles is to buffer that oxidative stress, which we're seeing more and more of. Just stress in general drives oxidative stress, much less all the toxicity and food-like substances that we're eating.
And our body produces the cannabinoids internally. There's two that we know of. There's probably more that have yet to be discovered. But anandamide is one of them, and the other one is 2-AG. And they are super potent antioxidants, and they do have a plethora of other functions in the endocannabinoid system and body. But essentially, we've been idling this engine of the endocannabinoid system. So when we have, even going to the grocery store and needing to pick between more than six options, they've studied creates a notable oxidative stress response in the body. So just going shopping creates a significant oxidative event, and the body deploys these cannabinoids to try and stop it, but it's already in limited supply. So it's kind of like it's running in an artificially induced negative feedback loop. And so when you get enough of the cannabinoids back in, it can all of a sudden kick the engine into gear and all of a sudden driving in the freeway and getting stuck in rush hour, you don't feel the same response. You're actually got kind of like a buffer and on a psychological level as well as a physiological level.
Right.
Which is one of the things that are doing.
So you said that so far we've discovered two cannabinoids that the body can produce, so maybe there's more we just haven't discovered, but how many total do we know of in the plant or otherwise that have been discovered?
Yeah, so there's about 110 in the cannabis plant. Now, other plants have cannabinoid-like compounds like helichrysum, purple echinacea, but nowhere near the quantities nor diversity to properly feed the endocannabinoid system other than the cannabis plant. And what's fascinating is we've co-evolved with this plant, and it's been with us through every single iteration of society. In fact, it's actually in the Bible, the anointing oil, one of the main ingredients is called cannabosum, which is translated to sweet calamus, but from historical record, finding cannabis resin in Israel in that time period, as well as cannabis fiber clothing, it's likely that cannabosum was cannabis in the etymology. And so it's one of the anointing oil ingredients. Literally every single civilization, other than the Inuit and then Aboriginal Australian pre-Western, have had documented cannabis cultivation use for millennia.
Wow. So pretty much everyone in the world for millennia have been consuming, using hemp and getting the cannabinoids.
Exactly.
Talk about historically, I mean, the colonies you said were required, at least Jamestown was required by law to grow this hemp.
Yep.
Talk a little more on all the industrial uses. Agriculture is big in West Texas. And then why exactly did this go away? I mean, for thousands of years, everyone's accepted it. And then do you know from a historical perspective, yeah, what was behind the scenes really going on that caused this to go away?
Yeah. So Pennsylvania, for example, was actually founded explicitly to be a hemp colony. There's still hemp mill stones in Pennsylvania and historical record of generations feeding into the chickens. It's useful. It's one of the strangest plants because it's got such a diversity of significant use. First and foremost, being its fiber content, it's extremely strong. The bast fibers actually have a strength rate similar to silk from a spider. And so it's an incredibly strong plant, and the fibers were used for nautical rope. It's antifungal, antimicrobial, cannabinoids are. And so the ropes made out of it are perfect for nautical use. They don't rot. In fact, the hemp for Victory Gardens, right after the Prohibition, they realized that there was a shortage of hemp, and so that we needed to regrow it. So they quickly allowed it to be grown for the war effort. In fact, all canvas and issued military canvas is still made from hemp and due to Prohibition. And thankfully, it got fixed just recently with the new farm bill that got passed last year. But we have to use non-domestic hemp sources for our soldiers. But it additionally, it was used for bedding, paper. Like I said, the first draft of the Constitution was written on hemp paper. It actually is a dynamic accumulator, so it benefits the soil. In fact, Jefferson was quoted saying the most patriotic thing you could do is to sow hemp. He wrote about how he much preferred growing hemp because it actually built the soil up, and you could grow it for multiple rotations without depleting it, versus tobacco, which is highly taxing on the soil. And you can make now, in modern use, we figured out how to make concrete replacement that's not structural, but it's bulletproof, fireproof, waterproof, antimicrobial, air filtering, acoustically stable replacement out of the one part of the plant. And then we actually partnered with the National Labs in CRADA. We figured out how to make a scalable method of creating graphene out of the hemp, a different part of the hemp plant, which can be used for batteries and supercapacitors. Very exciting. And so back in one of the first patents that was going to be patented was Jefferson, when he was at the patent office, and he figured out a method of doing coarse, what's called decorticaation, so separating the bast fibers from the kind of woody core. And because it's such a strong plant, it was a very high labor-intensive process to separate those, so the horse thrasher, and he said that this is too important for the American population, open source it. And flash forward to the 40s, and, or 30s actually, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture figured out a method to mechanically decorticate the hemp that would have created an equal pulp-making process for hemp paper to that of lumber. And 1 acre of hemp is the equivalent of 4¾ acres of forest for paper production. But until that invention, there wasn't an efficiency, so the economy didn't work for scale. This invention is made, and it would essentially have eliminated Hearst's monopoly on lumber, and he also owned the newspaper, along with DuPont, with rayon, who had their patent specifically on tinsel from lumber for this rayon. And hemp is grown in a 40-day cycle, so you could 4x the production with a 40-day cycle. Plus, there was a plethora of other uses. Plus, it was as one of the it was as American as apple pie from a historical perspective. And so they had to essentially he created a campaign to figure out how to make it legal. What they did was they focused on the cousin plant, which had high THC, which is actually socially acceptable, wasn't rampant, but it was used. There's no issue really, except for focusing on in certain areas there was concern of usage, and what they did was they played on that, demonized the high THC varietal, utilized anti-immigration sentiment and fear to say that this was a double plant, popped it through the media channels that he owned through the newspaper, and quickly passed laws to completely eliminate the cannabis plant entirely. So they focused on high THC, but their real intention was to make the fiber and nutrient varietals illegal from an industry perspective.
Wow. So money at the root of it is what took this plan offline, focusing on one variety or the varieties that had more THC, which is a psychotropic component. Interesting. Well, we've got a few minutes before the break, so let's get into so it became illegal, and now, you know, over the last few years it's kind of become legal medicinally, but now the farm bills make it this another level of legality. So kind of explain that. You know, people hear about medical marijuana in Colorado or Oregon or wherever, and I know a lot of states have it now. But to explain the difference between that, medical marijuana, and what the Farm Bill was doing.
So basically, the hemp definition is a legal definition, and the guy who defined it was a Canadian in the 70s, and they realized that there's all these industrial applications and needs for it, but they were still going along with the prohibition. So he said, I'm going to arbitrarily draw the cutoff at 0.3% THC, where really the psychoactive threshold is anything below 1%, and it's 1% or lower. So certain parts of Europe have 1% cutoff, but the general standard is 0.3% delta-9 THC on a dry weight basis. Anything below that is legally hemp. Anything above it is psychoactive cannabis. And so the new farm bill, for the first time since prohibition, redefined the entire hemp plant as not just the fiber and stems, but the entire plant, and any cannabis plant whose delta 9 was below 0.3 on a dry weight basis. It's now completely descheduled off the Controlled Substances Act and under USDA control. So it was a major historical shift in policy and brought us back to how, actually for the majority time of this country, people were farming hemp, and said it was really only a slight blip where we had this prohibition. But now it's legal again. And so there's multiple different iterations of uses, right, that we talked about from an industrial perspective, but also from a nutrient perspective. And so people are able to cultivate the plant for high CBD, full-spectrum extract. Some people are focusing on just isolating the CBD molecule, which we kind of touched on, but it's like the trumpet section versus the entire symphony orchestra. The body's evolved and needs to have all of the balance of micronutrients beyond just CBD itself. You need the CBC and CBG and terpenes and bioflavonoids to properly fuel the system. And so isolate is very limited in its effect, and that's actually going to be going to pharmaceutical only due to drug purity laws. Pretty shortly, and so you're going to see the isolates go off the market and the full spectrum stay on the market, which is good for the end user and for the body. And whereas medical cannabis, there's different ratios, and the body actually, in certain circumstances, I see THC as like a scalpel, whereas CBD is a full spectrum. When I say CBD, I mean full spectrum, being a with low THC. More like it's an adaptogen, so it can modulate systems, whereas THC tends to be single-directional, more like traditional pharmaceutical compounds, where it pushes things in one direction, and that can be very useful for certain situations and certain types of cancers. You need different ratios, but in general, everybody needs a phytonutrient source of the cannabinoid and does not need high THC. In fact, it can throw you slightly out of homeostasis. But there are needs for it on a medical perspective, so it's good that states have high THC as well, but it's opening up because people do need that. But the general population really needs high CBD, low THC. And thankfully, with the farm bill, that's opened up.
Okay, we have a text. Now, I guess, Will, the question is from the texter. What brand do you recommend? I've heard it's good for calming and anxiety. Is this true? And if so, would it be safe for kids? There's a lot of different CBD oil brands out there, I understand, but I guess if you were to say, you know, calming and anxiety.
Well,
for kids.
Before we'll answer that, because that may turn into a long answer, because we're almost.
We'll probably need to go to the break and then come back. Yeah.
Because that's going to have a lot to do with, is it full spectrum? Is it just, you know, these isolates that Will just got finished talking about? So you can pluck out these particular compounds out of the CBD full spectrum, you know, the whole plant. You can just pluck out THC. That's the psychotropic, what people think of marijuana, get high. You can pluck out just a cannabinoid, one or two particular CBD cannabinoid oils, or the full spectrum thing. So we'll need to get into that more, and then all the different ways to process it, to extract it, to deliver it, to and absorption wise.
Exactly.
You know, if you eat this versus inhale this versus smell the oil, like an essential oil. Everybody's familiar with essential oils, and you smell them, and they get into your brain faster. So that's a great question, but it's going to be a long answer. So let's take a break, and when we come right back from this break, we'll get into that answer and some more. So
okay.
Stick with us.
All right, hold on. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, Veritas Medical. Archive shows, we have it all there, veritasmedical.com. Also learn more about our practice as well. All right, we're going to get back to our guest this morning and back to Dr. Edwards. And again, if you have a question along the way, text line available, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800 along the way.
All right, we will jump right back in with our guest, Will Clyden, who founded Ojai Energetics in 2014. And we are talking CBD oil and hemp plant and cannabinoids. So right before the break, we had a texter text in about what brand to use and specifically for anxiety. So let's get into that, because there's a lot to this. Of course, quality of even the plant, you know, the soil that it was grown in, the plant itself and how it's harvested, and the harvesting technique and the processing and the extracting and full spectrum versus individual extracts. So Will, you can answer that question, but take as much time as you need and go into as much detail as you need on how to, in your opinion, with all your research, and that's the goal of your company, is to provide a pure and healthy and ethically produced cannabinoid. So I'll let you take the floor and answer that question.
Yeah, it's great points. There's a few things you need to look out for, because people are the market's exploding with people just trying to jump into the swell, and it's a rightly earned buzz. But the issue is you need to make sure that the quality is there. And a few questions is like you said, where was it grown first and foremost? Initially, before the Farm Bill, people had to import it, and that was one of the catalysts for me starting the company, was finding a clean source, because it's actually, the plant is very good at cleaning up heavy metals from the soil. You don't want to use those plants that are grown in heavy metal-rich soil. You can remediate the soil, but you don't want to eat those plants. And people were taking plants from China, which had high heavy metals, and extracting that and selling that in extracts with just insanely high heavy metal counts. So the one thing, you always want to make sure that it's third-party batch tested for heavy metals, VOCs, which are volatile organic compounds, pesticides, herbicides, and then terpenes, and then cannabinoids. Terpenes are like the active ingredients in essential oils, and they actually play a vital role with cannabinoids, that we can get into in a second. But more than just looking at the cannabinoid content, you want to look for third-party batch for all those other compounds to make sure that it's good to put in your body. There's been issues of another issue is people are using synthetic fillers and other compounds that your body really does not need. So making sure that it's done properly from an ingredient integrity sourcing standpoint is vital. And then you want to look at hot dosage, which is really important. And I touched on that they're finding that the hemp-fed animals, which is the predominant way that humans for thousands of years have had a cannabinoid intake, add up to 1% per egg. So that's around 500 milligrams of a fat-soluble, fat-based CBD. Now, the bioavailability is really important. And that means how much, when you eat something, how much can your body actually use of it? And cannabinoids have very poor bioavailability. So around 90% of them get destroyed before they actually make it into the blood for the body to use. And then once it's in there, it's also how much of that can be used. And so if you eat 20 milligrams of a regular fat-based CBD oil, and we're talking full spectrum, it's even less bioavailable for isolate. Full spectrum CBD oil, if you eat 20 milligrams CBD, only 2 milligrams actually makes it into the bloodstream. 90% of that got destroyed. And what happens is the body needs to encapsulate them internally to make them soluble in water so it can pass through this water layer that's kind of like the gatekeeper of our body and get into the bloodstream. And so the process in which it encapsulates the cannabinoids in a nano-encapsulation in our gut, and we do it for any type of fat we eat, is just not efficient, 90% destroyed, but you're paying for 100%. And so more and more data is indicating that you really need a minimum of 500 milligrams of fat-based CBD to properly engage the endocannabinoid system. And you actually need less over time, which is good, not more on average. So it's got an inverse tolerance, but 500 milligrams of fat-based CBD to properly turn the system on is typically like an entire bottle of most products on the market. And when you start seeing these higher numbers with lower prices, in all likelihood, what's happening is they're using isolate, which is cheaper, and they're, and if they say it's a full spectrum, but it has a 3,000 number, most of the time they're adding isolate to it to bump that number up and throwing the ratio off. But you need an incredible amount with a very high cost point to properly engage the endocannabinoid system. So what we figured out in 2014 was how to encapsulate it like the body does without using any synthetics, which is really important when you go to making something enhance solubility or bioavailability. You're also enhancing whatever you don't, it enables it to get past the gatekeeper. And so you don't want to put anything synthetic in, and so we figured out how to do it with just certified organic plants, and crack that code. So ours can get in 30 seconds versus 30 minutes, which is how long it takes for the body to do it. And the bioavailability skyrockets because we bypass that system, and you can get an active dose with under a dropper, sometimes starting with up to 3 droppers, depending on the individual. As a loading dose, and then you can go to drops to get efficacious dosages, which is critical for affordability and efficacy. And another thing that we discovered with this unique absorption is that it will actually modulate flavor in the same way that zinc modulates flavor, going from like a watery taste to a fuzzy metallic for zinc. Ours, the cannabinoids, when properly encapsulated, will actually change flavor in the mouth, going from very bitter when you're in a low efficacy dosage point to very sweet like honey at the peak of these curves, and then back down to bitter again and then back up to sweet. And you can trace out these efficacy curves for the body, so you can literally get pinpoint perfect dosage for your body for that day with our technology, which is incredibly important for a multitude of reasons. So going back,
I just want to summarize real quick.
Yeah.
You're saying is basically our forefathers were feeding this to their chickens. Chickens would eat it, produce an egg, and one egg would have 500 milligrams.
That's what preliminary data is indicating, is per egg is about 500 milligrams. So we've been consuming thousands of milligrams of fat-based CBD regularly for millennia. And right. So now with the new market, people hikes up the price, and there's just not an ethic. You'd have to eat a ton of bottles and pay a lot of money to get a proper engagement of the endocannabinoid system. Right. Now, you're going to get some benefits, and then also placebo is useful, but to really tune the system, you need, the data is showing around 500 milligrams minimum of a fat-based CBD with fat-based bioavailability daily.
As opposed to a water-soluble form.
Correct. And now not all water solubles equal either. So that sometimes you can
people are taking the isolate and they're just decreasing particle size, and that gives about a 3x improvement. And again, it's isolate, and so it's not very, the bioavailability is not super enhanced. And then another method is to do something called a liposome, but they, for cannabis extracts, liposomal is only using synthetically modified compounds to you can only use synthetically modified or synthetic compounds to make it, and that's about an 8 times more bioavailability increase, as well as a 15-minute onset. And what we figured out is using just certified organic plants, it's a single droplet, and it's about a 30-second onset. It's approximately over 20x. More data is coming in, actually, indicating that it's well over 100.
Well,
bioavailability increase.
And then you mentioned that 500 milligram to engage the endocannabinoid system.
Yes.
Basically, I look at that as filling up all those receptors. You flood the body with this higher dose,
exactly.
You fill up all those receptors,
yeah.
And then once your body's filled up, then you can dose it down to the tune
exactly.
of just even
down
some
regularly.
Drops to maintain a good balance, basically, is what you're saying.
And it modulates. So there's these bell curves of efficaciousness, and they don't stay in the same place. They modulate daily depending on oxidative load. They tend to go down over time with inverse tolerance, but it's a moving target. And so that's what's really exciting about what we discovered with our technology, is that you can pinpoint the right dose using the modulation of the cannabinoid receptors of the tongue, so that you never miss an efficacious dose, because it could have been, let's say, 20 milligrams per kilogram body weight is the efficacious ideal for that one bell curve. And then the next day, it could be 10 milligrams per kilogram, and more is actually less effective. With a fat-based CBD or even water-soluble liposomal, you're not going to be able, you don't get that modulation of the cannabinoid receptors in the tongue, and so you're shooting in the dark. And so you'll find a lot of people will say, like, oh, it's taken, they basically took them about a month to get enough in the system at minimum dose range, cost a lot of money, and then all of a sudden it just stops working. And it's typically because it down-regulates, and what was an efficacious dose is now an ineffective dose. They actually need less, not more. So this way, with our tech, you can pinpoint the right dose for your body for that day every time.
And you do that purely through the taste. When it's bitter, you know you need more, and once it hits sweet, that's your dose. I mean, that's enough?
Exactly. And there's multiple bell curves. And so, like, the way that the endocannabinoid system works is in triage manner. Right. And so sometimes we think, let's say, like, you've got a headache that pops up, and we think that's our number one issue. And you take it to the sweet spot, and the body, the endocannabinoid system, may be prioritizing your gut over your headache. And what we think is the number one, the body says it's actually not number one on the list. And it takes care, it uses the cannabinoids to go to the gut first. What we've found is, majority of the time, what we think is the number one issue, if it's not on the list of the first bell curve, the second sweet spot, most of the time it will be on the list if whatever we think is number one. So if you take it, it's sweet, 5 minutes later, you don't see the needle moved, you redose, majority of the time you'll see that what we think is number one will actually be taken care of.
Okay. So practically speaking, if someone's not consumed any cannabinoids, and they get a bottle of your product, and they is it recommended to take a full 500 milligram dose?
Yeah, so 5 milligrams. The best way is titrate using the tongue. 500 milligrams of a fat based equivalent. So with a bioavailability, it's over 20x. So if you apply a 20x multiplier. Do it. So 5 milligrams of ours is like 100. More data is actually showing we're close to 100x. So essentially 50 milligrams of ours, which would be about up to 3 droppers, would be a 500 milligram dose.
Okay. So take that.
25 milligrams.
So you take that dose, say 3 droppers. And then you start to titrate up till you hit sweet that same day, that same time?
The best way to do it is to start with a quarter dropper and just titrate quarter dropper at a time. And you'll notice it will, if you're very deficient with endocannabinoid deficiency, it will be very, very bitter. And then you just keep going, and it will, with a quarter dropper at a time, it will start getting sweeter and sweeter. Most people, it's going to be around two droppers is where it's fully sweet for the first dose. Some will need higher, depending on their issues. Some will need less. And so this way, if you titrate the quarter dropper until it gets almost 100% sweet, then you do a drop at a time, it will be very cloyingly sweet like honey when you really hit the peak, but you just need it almost 100%. Like, nearly sweet is going to be ideal, or is the optimal range. You don't need it 100% sweet. That's ideal, but you don't need it. And then stop. And then re-titrate, and it will go back to bitter again and back to sweet if you need to for an issue that didn't get, that you didn't feel the needle move on.
Okay. And then, say, the following day, would you typically just start?
Most people would need less the next day.
Okay. But you go through the same process.
Yes, and you can average it out. Also, with our formula, you can put it in coffee, put it in a juice, and start with like a couple droppers, and then go down to a dropper. Ideally, though, you're utilizing this method because that way you know that you're actually pinpointing optimal dose range.
Right. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. What other plants, are there any other plants that one could consume that would come anywhere near these levels of cannabinoids? And secondly, what about just, you know, eating these leaves on a salad or juicing them or consuming it in some other way? Is there other ways to do that in a more natural manner, I guess?
Yeah. Other plants? No, nowhere near. It's a very special plant. There's nothing that comes close. Now, high omega fatty acids the body uses to convert into internal cannabinoids. Chocolate or cacao contains anandamide in it. That's the only plant that we know of that produces anandamide is cacao or chocolate, and then black truffles contain anandamide as well. But not at levels of, due to the oxidative stress load, basically, that when you put it in, the bioavailability, it gets degraded almost immediately. When you take it in conjunction with a healthy endocannabinoid system, now you start getting a synergistic effect with those foods. But no. And then, so for juicing or eating the raw form, that's what produces, the plant actually doesn't produce CBD, it produces CBDA, or the acid form. And it's through heat that this process called decarboxylation that takes place and changes it to CBD. Now, CBDA has a whole other skew of benefits. CBD, the decarboxylated form, is, with the other phytocannabinoids, is much broader in efficacy of feeding the system. But there's a huge benefit of having the non-decarboxylated form as well. And that's where eating the plant raw would give you those non-decarboxylated cannabinoids. And so if you look at, again, feeding, let's say, the cows would eat it. Switzerland, the cows love it. If you talk to people in Nepal, it grows wild everywhere in Nepal. And the yaks eat it all the time. It's their favorite food. And then the Nepalese will drink the milk and eat the yak meat. So if you're drinking the milk, you're getting the non-decarboxylated, you're getting the raw form of CBDA, and then you eat the steak, now you're heating it and you're decarboxylating it and turning it into CBD. So that's how historically the human population got both the raw form and the decarboxylated form, is from eating the products, the byproducts like milk, raw, and then cooking the animals or cooking the eggs, would give them the decarboxylated forms.
Wow, very interesting.
Yeah.
So what do you find in your experience since doing this, or specifically y'all's technology in 2014, what do you hear anecdotally from your customers or clients? Because everyone always asks me, well, is it good for this? Is it good for that? And my answer would be after this show. Well, if there's receptors on every cell and every system, digestive, neurological, hormone, all the different systems, it would be one of those vital nutrients, I would say, that probably it's going to impact every potential symptom. But is there ones that you've noticed in particular that seem to work for certain symptoms?
Yeah. So, if we look at the trifecta of issues most people are facing in modern humans is sleep, pain, and anxiety. The endocannabinoid system regulates our body's internal opioid system, as well as endocrine, like you talked about, for hormones, for sleep, circadian rhythm, and it's also works on the nervous system. So we're limited in what we can share from a testimonial standpoint from the FDA. It's really quite profound what happens when you get the, and this is what you found, right, is we put the right nutrients back in, you start seeing just incredible changes.
Right.
It really comes down to dosage on different issues, and then that's where, you know, we work with functional integrative doctors like yourself. We have a medical division as well that we have IP for, so I can speak more into that. But on disease issues, but the that one question, or the question on anxiety, that one's huge. From just basically a lot of these issues that we're facing that we see from anxiety, you know, aches and pains, sleep, they are almost 100% endocannabinoid deficiency related.
Yeah.
Okay, what text coming in? Will, what about, would CBD oil be good for hypothyroidism?
Yeah, so coming from let's say our medical side and IP, we have art on that specifically for thyroid. And yes, actually Ricky Blake, the talk show host, she had a tremendous experience with her thyroid and getting cannabinoids back in the system.
And my comment on that would be many of the hypothyroid symptomatic patients, it's an autoimmune condition. The immune system's attacking the thyroid or the enzymes that convert your thyroid to the active form. And so really, yeah, it's a thyroid issue, but below that or deeper, on a deeper level, it's more of an immune system issue, which we've spoken to for sure. The endocannabinoids modulate that immune system and
they modulate
response.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if someone's got a deficient immunoresponse, it will actually increase it. And if it's overactive, it will modulate it down and pull it into balance. It's all about balancing.
Right. Well, it's really fascinating and you know, even the industrial uses, I keep going back to that. We've had a few farmers on our show in the past month or two talking about how to regenerate the soil. And when you mentioned the hemp plant, and Thomas Jefferson said that's one of the most patriotic things you could do, plant that because it's going to regenerate the soil instead of just deplete the soil.
It's an amazing rotational cover crop.
Right. I imagine I'm going to have some farmers calling me now and asking about, how can I grow this? Can I grow this? But back to that farm bill and from a legal standpoint, a hemp plant, if it's a variety of plant that has less than 0.3% THC produced in it, then it's legal to grow that? Is that your interpretation?
The caveat, there's still guardrails up, right? So at a state, this is at a federal level, it is completely off the Controlled Substances Act. It's as legal as a tomato. It still has basically the language states that if a state hasn't developed their own compliance system, that the USDA's will take precedent over it, but they've given them some time to get that up and running. So don't go running out and just planting because you could get into trouble. Also, there's certain states that have created laws that kind of bar it at a state level, and now it's luckily people are waking up to the fact that this is such an not only from a health and soil perspective, but an economic perspective for industry and communities. the laws barring it are being revisited, and we're pushing for, instead of having a checkerboard effect of different laws for state, the Farm Bill clearly states it's for interstate commerce of cannabinoids as well as industrial uses. So this year is going to be all about unifying policy across the United States. Most states are fine, but again, you have to check with your ag department what their policy and how the registration process goes.
Right. And speaking along that line, we'll have another text. Greg wants to know,
yes,
CBD oil and drug screen, I work in a safety-sensitive industry. Could that set off a drug tox test? Or?
Yeah, so it very well could, especially since a lot of these products, people are not formulating well. And there are hot, quote-unquote, hot products on the market that exceed the 0.3 percent, and it depends on the individual's metabolism. That's why you always want to find something that's got a batch test result on it, as well as making sure that it's coming from a company with integrity. Now, going to the possibility, it's likened to like a poppy seed bagel. There's a possibility. Now, we work with professional athletes and LEO, law enforcement, and military, and they get tested without issue taking our product. That being said, you still have to use with your own precaution because, again, there is a potential for it to be a false positive. If it's truly well-formulated, in reality, it's basically very, very, very unlikely that it would trip it, and a secondary test would confirm. But there are cases of people also using higher THC and then blaming it on the CBD oil, which is something that the industry needs to deal with, kind of like the kombucha failing a breathalyzer.
Right.
But yeah, it's possible but unlikely. You have to use it at your own discretion.
Okay. So basically, at the federal level, it's cleared, but now this year, all the states will come in and most likely all put out their regulations and how to properly regulate this crop. I think environmentally, climate-wise, West Texas, from what I've read historically, this would be a good area. The soil and the climate and the drought kind of tendency here. And I just want to throw this out that both my granddads were GPs, general practice medical doctors. My great-grandfather was also. And so looking historically, as I like to do, how did old-time doctors used to practice? And it was fascinating. I have these old bottles on my shelf in my office of these old medicine and tinctures that I've found over the years and old doctor bags and stuff. And I do not have a tincture of hemp, but looking back and doing my research, almost all doctors back then did. All these docs that made house calls back in the early part of the 1900s and up into Prohibition, I guess. But tinctures of this hemp were used for teething, used for colic, used for all sorts of stuff. So it's really a fascinating, like you said, kind of a miracle plant with all the industrial uses, all the medicinal uses, and all the receptors on all these cells and organ systems of the body. So it definitely sounds like something we need to learn more about and start consuming if we want optimal health. So really appreciate you educating us and especially about your particular product. We haven't even mentioned, though, how people get in touch with you or your product or your website, or what's the best way to for our listeners to follow up with your company.
So the website's Ojai, O-J-A-I, Energetic, ENERGETICS.com.
O-J-A-I, Energetics.com.
Yep.
Okay.
And we've got a program where we guarantee access to anyone at any price they can afford if they need assistance with that. Our mission is to get everyone's endocannabinoid systems online and be a catalyst to good. We're a benefit corporation, and so if you have any questions, need any assistance, you can reach out at info@OhioEnergetics or sales@OhioEnergetics.com.
Awesome.
And we'll take care of you.
Super. Well, this has been a great show. Thanks, Will, for joining us again bright and early out there in California. But Will Clyden, who founded Ojai Energetics in 2014, out there to provide a pure, high-quality, and ethically produced CBD oil, full-spectrum CBD oil. So thanks, Will. Everybody go to Will's website to learn more, and we might have to have you back in the future as this becomes more and more mainstream. But thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and look forward to talking.
All right.
Will Clayton, everybody. Appreciate that. Dr. Edwards, we appreciate it. Of course, we'll see you back here next week on You're the Cure. Check out our website, veritasmedical.com. Archived programs there. If you missed today's show, we'll have it up here in about 24 hours at the website, veritasmedical.com.